Both Charlesworth and Kranz are participating in working out this descent and touchdown. And that's something you talked, and we recorded some interesting conversation with Cliff about, as I recall.
And we'll be playing that tape, the tape-recorded interview, very soon. We have, I suppose, another 30 minutes or so of signal with...
18 minutes.
18
minutes,
I'm behind time.
Okay. One thing I meant to mention was that... One thing I meant to mention was the fact that we're not hearing much from the men because they are very busily...
Have my lights? Sure do.
Okay, your tracking light's on.
That's Gordon acknowledging he sees the tracking light on the lunar module, on Intrepid. And they're very busy working, and we have heard during the past few minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, quite a few bits of engineering and technical information going up relative to the spacecraft trajectory. This is part of the procedure being used in refining to the greatest accuracy possible exactly where that lunar module is. That's the thing they want to keep track of right now, and more so than with the command module Yankee Clipper.
And who is the relay point? The capsule communicator on this?
The capsule communicator does all of the verbal
right.
relaying. Some of this was being done automatically into the computer through electronic transmission back through the Goldstone tracking station. Goldstone, California, at the moment, is the primary station, and that's how we're able to receive...
The computer's yours.
See, he just... That's Jerry Carr saying the computer's yours.
You.
We've just finished giving... Well, that was Yankee Clipper, I believe, some updated guidance information.
And I suppose we should mention that Jerry Carr is an astronaut.
Yes. He's one of the 52 astronauts in the program.
Well, Rhett Turner, we'll ask you to stand by in Houston... The moment we're going to the Voice of America newsroom for a summary of news. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That flight now 108 hours and 40 minutes into its mission. Now, that news from the VOA newsroom.
In the headlines, Apollo 12 astronauts come closer to their moon landing. Funeral arrangements are made for Joseph Kennedy, father of the late president. And the U.S. Senate votes Friday on a controversial nominee for the Supreme Court. Those are the headlines. Now the news in detail. Apollo 12's command module, Yankee Clipper, and lunar lander Intrepid have separated and are flying in their own lunar orbits, preparatory to man's second landing on the moon. The undocking and separation maneuvers were executed flawlessly. Viewers on Earth were able to watch on live television as the delicate separation took place. In less than an hour from now, Charles Conrad and Alan Bean in Intrepid will initiate their descent orbit burn to put their windmill-shaped craft into position for its powered descent and touchdown on the moon. Touchdown is scheduled for 6 hours 53 Greenwich Mean Time, on the western edge of the moon's ocean of storms. Intrepid's landing will come almost 4 months to the day from the historic date of July 20th, when Apollo 11 astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin placed man's first footprints on the moon. The continuing story of Apollo 12 is being carried to the world live by the Voice of America. A small and simple funeral will be held Thursday in Hyannis, Massachusetts, for Joseph P. Kennedy, father of the late president, who died at his Hyannisport home Tuesday at the age of 81. A spokesman said that Richard Cardinal Cushing will officiate at the mass and that the family has asked that the priests wear white vestments because they want it to be of a joyous theme. Burial will be in Brookline, Massachusetts. Among the condolences pouring into Hyannisport was one from U.N. Secretary General U Thant, who touched on the service given to his country by the former ambassador and the courage with which he faced tragic losses in his family. President Nixon, in a tribute, said Joseph P. Kennedy inspired his family to share his own strong sense of dedication to his nation. A dynamic man who amassed a fortune early in life, Mr. Kennedy fathered 3 sons, who became U.S. senators and one went on to the presidency. American and Soviet representatives held the first working session of preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation in Helsinki Tuesday. The meeting at the U.S. Embassy lasted 90 minutes. No statements were issued after the talks. The next session was scheduled for Thursday at the Soviet Embassy. Both sides have described the private talks in the Finnish capital as preliminary and exploratory, to define the basis for future substantive negotiations. The two sides have also said statements would be issued only when developments warranted. The Senate has set Friday for a vote on President Nixon's nomination of Clement Haynsworth to the Supreme Court. With the report, here is Larry Lesser.
By unanimous consent, the U.S. Senate agreed to vote early Friday afternoon on the confirmation of Judge Clement Haynsworth, President Nixon's nominee to fill the current vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. Confirmation requires a simple majority of the Senate, but the 100-member body is so closely divided that observers hesitate to predict the outcome. Judge Haynsworth's supporters were cheered on Tuesday by the switch of Republican Senator Ralph Smith of Illinois from a position of doubt about Judge Haynsworth to one of support for his confirmation. However, about 8 Republican senators have still not committed themselves for or against Judge Haynsworth. Larry Lesser, Voice of America, the U.S. Senate.
A group of African and Asian nations submitted a resolution to the United Nations General Assembly calling for an investigation and report on what they called violations of human rights by Israel in occupied territories. The nations, Pakistan, Congo-Brazzaville, India, and Guinea, accused Israel of collective and area punishment, indiscriminate destruction of homes, and mass deportation of inhabitants of occupied territories. Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan said that the activities of Arab guerrillas in Lebanon threatened that country's sovereignty and integrity. And General Dayan warned that Israel would take measures against the guerrillas inside Lebanon if they attack Israel from bases on Lebanese soil. U.S. Secretary of State William Rogers indicated on a television program that the Nixon administration plans new initiatives aimed at improving relations with Communist China. He said the United States will encourage Peking to renew talks at Warsaw or elsewhere and will be taking other steps, which he did not outline. Mr. Rogers said the United States would like to have more travel between the two nations, better communications, and trade relations. He said Peking has not indicated that it is interested, but has reacted unfavorably to these ideas. President Nixon has accepted the credentials of the new Greek ambassador to the United States, Vassil Vitsakis. At a White House ceremony Tuesday, President Nixon recalled the strong ties of friendship between the United States and Greece. He said the United States knows how firm is Greece's attachment to the ideals of democracy. And he said the United States looks forward to the day when those ideals are once more given full expression. Ambassador Vitsakis said his government is leading the Greek nation toward a fully democratic life. He said this will be brought about by the total implementation of the new constitution approved by the Greek people in the 1968 referendum. The U.S. Justice Department said it is investigating some leaders of last week's anti-war demonstrations in Washington to determine if the federal anti-riot law was violated. That statute prohibits crossing a state line to incite violence. It is the basis for the current trial of 7 men in Chicago charged with inciting violence during the Democratic Convention last year. And President Nixon has asked Congress to enact a new law designed to increase trade and relax trade restrictions. The president noted that increased world commerce is in America's national interest as long as fair competition exists. Mr. Nixon asked for authority to make modest tariff cuts and to eliminate some non-tariff barriers. But he also asked for authority to take appropriate action if unjust restrictions are imposed on American exports. And that is the news. Lou Rowland reporting.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the descent and landing on the surface of the moon. The next major event, the descent orbit insertion, is now about 35 minutes away. It comes at 5 hours 45 Greenwich Mean Time. The burning of the large descent engine on the lunar landing craft Intrepid. At the moment, the mother spacecraft, Yankee Clipper, and the Intrepid are continuing to separate. We've had the first two major events in the descent and landing on the moon. That is, the, of course, the, what we call the soft undocking of the two craft, the lunar module from the command module. And then about 30 minutes later, we had a successful firing of the small thrusters on the command module, again separating the two craft to a greater distance, up to about 4 kilometers. Then, in about 35 minutes from now, the major firing, the firing of the spacecraft, the lunar landing craft engine, taking it down to within 50,000 feet, or 15,000 meters of the surface of the moon. A very important and critical maneuver, one, however, that will take place on what we call the backside or the far side of the moon, out of communications at that time with the Earth. But now let's get an updated report on these events from correspondent Rhett Turner at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston.
Since that separation maneuver, that very small rocket thrusting by the command module Yankee Clipper, the spacecraft have now drifted apart over 10 kilometers. The last reading we got was 8.4 kilometers and still drifting, so I'm just projecting just a bit there to say they're about 10 kilometers apart now. And Dick Gordon has turned off the TV camera, so we here on Earth can no longer see the lunar module Intrepid framed against the black sky, the blackness of space out there before him as it drifted away. As a matter of fact, he lost his high-gain antenna lock with the Earth 10 or 15 minutes ago, and we haven't had it back. I notice also I've been doing some calculating. According to the present figures from Mission Control, the descent, power descent burn will last about 11 minutes 23 seconds. Of course, Pete Conrad in his manual maneuver, if they follow the fully automatic mode right to touchdown, and Pete certainly will probably take over for the last few seconds, so that's not going to be exactly accurate. In 6 minutes and 15 seconds from now, both spacecraft should disappear from view from radio contact with the Earth, and the descent orbit burn around behind the moon, as we look at it, the descent orbit burn by Intrepid with Al Bean and Pete Conrad aboard will come 32 minutes 38 seconds from right then when I set it, and our clock is continuing to count down. The clocks we're referring to are synchronized with the extremely accurate, in fact they're atomically accurate, guided by atomic devices, the master clocks used in the mission control room. And these countdown and timing devices are made available to the press, to the radio and television media, so that we may follow second by second events. And before me is a screen with 6 different countdown displays, which we refer to occasionally in giving you, our listeners all over the world, the best possible ear view, audio view of following along with the flight. 31 minutes 46 seconds until DOI ignition, and 5 minutes right now until we should lose signal with the command module and the lunar module Intrepid. But just a minute or two ago, before we came back in, we heard Dick Gordon ask if the ground had copied his gyro-torquing angles. He is working on the very precise alignment of his guidance platform. This, as we would emphasize again, is of the utmost importance in the things they're concentrating on most in trying to effect this pinpoint landing in order to get the lunar module Intrepid right down to the precise point they desire. That was Bean, I believe.
Intrepid Houston, LOS is coming up in 4 minutes.
Loss of signal in 4 minutes.
LOS, yes. Loss of signal. Jerry Carr left his own voice hanging there. I thought he was going to say something else. Just a quick question.
Okay, we'll try and have this alignment finished for you so you can look at it.
They're not talking much at this time.
They were aligning the guidance platform in the Intrepid, the very thing I was mentioning.
What's
there?
What's the star angle difference, Houston? Four balls, two?
That's
coming
Pete.
Coming at you with the torquing angle.
That's Roger, Pete.
That's Conrad.
How's that grab you? You looking at the disky?
Those are great. Your goal for DOI.
There it is.
How's that look, Pete says?
Intrepid Houston, we're looking at an AOS of 109.43.30.
AOS of 109.43.30. Let's. Now that is ground tracking telling Intrepid that from the data we have
and
now.
Clipper Houston, we're looking for you, AOS at 109.41.
Yankee Clipper will
okay,
come into view sooner.
There.
Dick Gordon says, okay, I'll be there. He certainly will. He won't be firing his rockets anymore. So from just the data from the very accurate tracking from here on Earth, 500,000 kilometers away, they can predict almost to the second when he will reappear on the other side of the moon. It's this sort of accuracy that's necessary in order to provide guidance and flight information to enable these spacecraft to descend and touch down exactly where we want them. Pete Conrad and Al Bean very busy just popping up and saying something only when they need the help of the ground as they're aligning the gyroscope guidance system on the spacecraft. They're doing this by using their sextant, sighting on stars, and then confirming that with the Earth. The DISKY, D-S-K-Y, is a display keyboard. Whenever you hear that word DISKY, you'll know he's talking about a computer display keyboard which will read out some numbers and tell an engineer, someone who knows how to read it, exactly what the errors or the guidance platform is saying to it through through the computer mechanism.
We should have loss of signal now, should we not?
About another minute and 45 seconds until the command module will go around the side of the moon according to the tracking information.
The command module will come around from the backside of the moon first, will it not? And then the Intrepid, the lunar landing module, follows later.
The reason that Intrepid will be later is because it's going to do a retrograde maneuver of the rocket, descent orbit insertion. So it will be some 2 minutes later if the maneuver is performed properly.
And, of course, the command module stays in its circular orbit of about 108.
Clipper, you're looking good. 1 minute to LOS. We'll see you on the other side.
There's a word from Jerry Carr, and you hear some noise beginning to come
yes,
into
sir,
the scene.
After all that jazz about the LCD, old Al Deveron is a half a degree off in yaw and a half a degree off in pitch, which is in the noise level, and I can see it out the window, no strain.
Beautiful, Pete, beautiful.
That's Al Bean. He's complimenting Al Bean's sightings. He says he's one half degree off in yaw, one half degree off in pitch, and that's well within the noise levels. The noise levels refer to electronic and mechanical noise.
Intrepid Houston, is that in relation to your new mark or the old one?
No, that's right around the 40 mark. It's off about 3/4 of a degree to the right and about 1/10 of a degree down in pitch.
There goes the command module.
I heard a so long there.
That was from Jerry Carr. That was the command module going over the hill, as they call it. Maybe Intrepid too.
This is Apollo Control. We've had loss of signal on both spacecraft as they went over the hill during the end of revolution number 13. When we acquire again in some 46 minutes from now, the lunar module Intrepid will have done the descent orbit maneuver. We'll be heading for a perisynthian of slightly over 8 nautical miles. And flight director Cliff Charlesworth here just advised all his flight controllers to take their last break during the period that we're out of contact with the spacecraft.
Everyone's standing up in the control room.
And at 108 hours, 57 minutes, ground elapsed time, this is Apollo Control.
You could hear behind Apollo Control announcer Terry White's voice, all of the men in Mission Control standing up and taking a breather. And through another one of our little television displays, we see Gene Kranz and Cliff Charlesworth stand up at their console. Deke Slayton, the director of flight operations, the head of all of the astronauts, is there. He and Jerry Carr stood up from the capsule communicators console and walked out. As a matter of fact, almost two-thirds of the room has emptied. Everybody's going to take a break because there's not a thing in the world they can do at this point but wait.
We're completely out of communications, not only voice communications, but all of the telemetry, are we not, at this point?
Everything is completely out of touch with the Earth. Both spacecraft, Yankee Clipper and Intrepid, are now behind the moon.
And that will go on for about 46 minutes. The actual time for the firing of the large descent engine for the descent orbit insertion is only about 25 or 26 minutes away. But
24:30.
You have the clock there, right?
And you notice there was a new timing on acquisition of signal, which was different from that which I reported to you earlier. When both spacecraft are in the normal circular orbit around the moon, they're usually out of touch just a bit over 30 minutes, 30 to 40 minutes in each two-hour period. And now with this perturbation of that circular orbit, it's going to take a little longer, particularly for the lunar module to come into view. So they will be out of touch from us for another 42 minutes. 42 minutes right now until we should be hearing from the Yankee Clipper.
Well, let me ask Bill Land at this point, if the descent engine should fail to fire in some, I don't have the clock, but that would be about 23 minutes from now. Would the Intrepid come back on this circular orbit at about the same time as the mother spacecraft?
That's right, Bill. As you know, the command module separated from the lunar module with a small reaction control system, small thruster burn. That put it about 2 miles away on the far side of the moon. At the time that the LEM will do its descent orbit burn with the descent propulsion system. Now, if they don't do that burn, the lunar module will remain in its near circular orbit. The command module will then come back around this side of the moon and come back up to apogee, very close to the lunar module, very close to where it was when it performed the separation maneuver. So they would have very little trouble in rejoining each other and rendezvousing.
That all assumes that we see no firing of it at all. Actually, the more interesting combinations of orbits come up if the descent engine fires a little bit or fires for a while, but not the fully scheduled time. Then we would as I say, have a more interesting situation.
in that situation, by the way, there are plans. We do know just what kind of burns we would have to conduct with the command module to conduct what we call a command module active rendezvous with the lunar module.
Yes, as long as the lunar module is in orbit, the command module has the capability to rendezvous with it.
In other words, it has that rescue, what you call a rescue capability.
Yes.
Well, gentlemen, we have some much more complicated maneuvers coming up. While we will not have signal for another 40 minutes or more, perhaps we can run through those. After the descent orbit insertion, we have a lapse of time of roughly about an hour until we have what we call that final powered descent, the PDI, the powered descent initiation. That comes at about 6 hours 42 Greenwich Mean Time. It is only about 11 minutes before touchdown on the moon. But yet, in those 11 minutes, a great many things happen, and perhaps you, Bill Land, and you, John Hammersmith, could go through that rundown, that flight, that part of the flight plan.
Well, Bill, as we discussed, the descent orbit burn will be conducted on the far side of the moon in about another 20 minutes. Now, that really is the first part of the landing maneuver, because it gets the spacecraft down to an altitude of about 50,000 feet when it comes around this side of the moon over the landing site. However, 12 minutes prior to getting over the landing site, the LEM will start its full thrusting of the descent propulsion system, and it will continue that thrusting, throttling it. It's throttleable, that is, it can have large or small thrust, and it will throttle as necessary to slow the spacecraft down and land it on the moon. Now, going through that procedure is a rather complex set of thrust levels. However, looking at it more simply, it's just a constant burn of the descent propulsion system until they're actually down on the surface of the moon.
And of course, that burn comes at what we call the paracentian, that is the low point of this new orbit that comes about after that first burn of the descent engine, putting it in that low point of about, it's roughly 14 kilometers, or about 8 nautical miles at the low point, or put it another way, 50,000 feet, or 15,000 meters. But
PDI starts at 15,000 meters, is that right, Bill?
That's right. It starts at, as you mentioned, the paracentian, or low point in that orbit that they begin with the burn on the far side of the moon. And as I mentioned, it's all part of, you can consider it all one maneuver. That is, even though that the two burns of the descent propulsion system are separated by an hour, the first burn lowers it first to the 15,000 meters. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what you quoted, and it's 50,000 feet anyhow.
Right.
And then the last burn, which is a continuous burn for approximately 12 minutes, actually puts it down on the surface of the moon.
Well, Bill, since landing Site 7 is on the western part of the visible side of the moon, does this give more time for data checks necessary to affect these pinpoint landing procedures that you like to talk about?
It does, Norm. It gives us more time than we had on Apollo 11, we'll put it that way. And consequently, the ground can update its tracking of the lunar module as it comes around the eastern or the right-hand side of the moon as you look at it. And it gives it more time to do that tracking and update the navigation and give some corrective information to the lunar module. Pete Conrad will be standing by when they come out from behind the moon to accept navigation updates, and he'll get two sets of those, one prior to the time he does his powered descent initiate, that is, ignites that descent propulsion system, and one approximately 4 minutes afterward, which is sort of a fine-tuning of the navigation.
We also mentioned the extra 20 to 24 seconds hovering capability. Were any modifications of the LEM necessary for this?
No modifications as such. We do have more fuel on board because we found that we can load it with less what we call ullage, or actually less space in the top of the tank with nothing but helium in it. So this time the tank is loaded a little more heavily than it was on Apollo 11. That does give us a little more time, that's true.
John Hammersmith, you've been terribly restrained lately. This is not in keeping with your personality. But seriously, I'd like to ask this, John. We speak of or Bill Land did earlier, of the engine being open full throttle in those final 11 minutes or so of descent to the lunar surface. But this actually is a braking, a retrograde maneuver, is it not?
Well, the initiation of this descent orbit, Bill, on the far side of the moon is also a retrograde maneuver. I was just looking at some of the figures here while Bill Land was talking, and I see that It's an interesting example of how we play the game of orbital mechanics to our own advantage. By firing on the far side of the moon and waiting an hour, it takes us approximately 70 feet per second of velocity change to lower that orbit from some 60 nautical miles down to about 8 nautical miles. Now, when we really mean business and want to come down in a hurry, it takes about 100 times that much velocity change at a full throttle setting, and it takes 11 minutes then to go the rest of the way. So that in the one case, in the case of the bulk of the descent, by waiting an hour, you lower the altitude considerably with very little energy expenditure. But once you stop playing this game of orbital mechanics and go in by brute force, the energy requirement goes up tremendously.
We might mention, John, that in any case, we have to slow the entire velocity of the spacecraft in orbit. We have to take that total velocity out before we can land. Otherwise, it would not be a controlled landing any longer.
That's right. I spoke in terms of altitude. Actually, as the altitude goes down, the velocity does go up.
Something that fascinates me is the attitude of the landing craft during these maneuvers. I think they've changed them somewhat, haven't they, Bill Land, since Apollo 11?
Well, on Apollo 11, the crew was what we call face down. That is, the windows were looking down...
on the surface?
To the surface of the moon, that's right, when they commenced their powered descent. And then a matter of seconds later, I guess it was actually a little over a minute later, they turned face up by just doing a roll maneuver. The reason for that was, number one, I guess, confidence, really. The first time they were going to perform this maneuver in earnest, they wanted to be able to look at the moon and just see how they were oriented, make sure it was they were oriented properly for the burn. And that gave them confidence then when they conducted their roll maneuver. They knew that they were pointed in the right direction. They could expect to see the moon coming up again as they became more vertical. This time, however, we do have that confidence, and we have proven the capability. And the crew wants to do it this way. They want to conduct the entire maneuver starting face up so that the communications and the radars will not have to do any work and torque around to the proper attitude. They'll be already in the appropriate attitude for, in the case of the radar, for taking ranges on the surface of the moon, and in the case of the communication system being locked down, as we say, with the Earth.
We should remind our listeners that this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the descent and landing on the surface of the moon. We are now 109 hours and 11 minutes into the flight of Apollo 12. The command module, the Yankee Clipper, and the lunar landing craft, the Intrepid, are on the far side of the moon. They're out of communication with Earth, and will be so for at least another 30 minutes or so. When they return from the backside of the moon, hopefully the Intrepid will have fired its main descent engine, taking it into within 50,000 feet of the surface of the moon, one of the first major movements, the first major actions of the lunar landing craft. While we're waiting for further reports on the flight of Apollo 12, let's go to the Voice of America newsroom for a brief summary of late world news.
The Apollo 12 spacecraft and the moon landing vehicle are flying in formation, each under its own power around the moon. Astronauts Charles Conrad and Alan Bean in the lander are preparing to leave astronaut Richard Gordon and the Apollo in a series of maneuvers to set down in the moon's ocean of storms. The landing procedure goes like this. The crew is to fire the main maneuvering rocket engine to put the lander, known as the Intrepid, into an orbit to bring the craft ever closer to the lunar surface. Much like an airplane making a landing, the flyers will monitor the descent of the Intrepid as they move downward and closer to their landing site. The landing system is computer-controlled, with the astronauts closely watching their instruments as they approach the surface. In the last few moments, if necessary, they will take over actual flight control to bring the craft down safely. The time of the landing is planned for 7 minutes before 7 hours Greenwich Mean Time, but it might come sooner. The United States and the Soviet Union have started preliminary talks on the limitation of strategic arms. The talks in Helsinki will set the stage for future substantive negotiations. A group of African-Asian nations have submitted a resolution to the United Nations General Assembly calling for an investigation of what they called violations of human rights by Israel in occupied territories. U.S. Secretary of State William Rogers said that numerous contacts have been made with Hanoi, but none have led to any progress toward settling the Vietnam War. Mr. Rogers spoke to newsmen after testifying in closed session before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which is conducting hearings on Vietnam. Funeral services will be held Thursday for Joseph Kennedy, father of the late president, who died Tuesday at the age of 81. President Nixon was among those sending condolences to the Kennedy family. He praised the late Mr. Kennedy for instilling his sense of national service into his family. And Prague Radio says a high Czechoslovak government advisor on political and economic matters has left the country and gone to London. The broadcast said his background was under investigation. He has been attacked in the past for his close association with the reform movement of last year. And that is the news in brief, Lou Rowland reporting.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting from the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington and from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, bringing you live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, landing on the surface of the moon, man's second landing. Scheduled now for 1:53 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. That would be 7 hours 53 Greenwich Mean Time. Let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston for an update on the whereabouts of Intrepid and the command module Yankee Clipper. Rhett Turner?
8 minutes and 6 seconds until descent orbit insertion, DOI. The lunar module Intrepid is then scheduled to fire its large descent engine and begin descending from 110 kilometers above the surface down to a point 15,000 meters, 1,500 meters, that is, just about... 15,000 meters,
15,
I'm correct the first time, from which point a final power descent maneuver will be conducted on down to the surface of the moon. We'll be within contact with them at that time when they do that power descent, although for the next 26 to 28 minutes, we will not be hearing from the spacecraft, either Yankee Clipper, the command module, or the lunar module Intrepid. They are behind the moon as viewed from Earth.
When will we regain signal, Rhett?
26 to 28 minutes from now, Bill. And then in 7 minutes, that ignition time is still ticking down. The mission control room is almost empty. Everybody took a break. A few of the gentlemen are beginning to file back in. Everyone in shirt sleeves. And Gene Kranz is sitting back at his console. And we see down in the trench the flight dynamics officers and the guidance officer waiting to pick up their crucial duty. The big job for some of the unsung heroes of the all of manned spaceflight, right there in the mission control room, ready to go.
Norm Guerra?
Cliff Charlesworth of the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston was prime flight director for the Apollo 11 mission to the moon. As was mentioned earlier, he is serving as a flight director with special responsibilities during this lunar descent phase of the Apollo 12 mission. William McCrory talked to Cliff Charlesworth about the undocking and lunar landing in Houston a few days ago. Here is that conversation.
Well, Cliff Charlesworth, you were the prime flight director on Apollo 11. What will your job be now on the flight of Apollo 12?
Well, I'll be pulling a regular shift, one of the three per day, until we get to the moon, and then I'll concentrate on the limb activation, checkout, and the descent through the first revolution after we're on the surface.
In other words, your specialty will be the descent of the lunar module, the limb, down to the surface of the moon.
That's right.
I wonder if we could go through that routine as we await the beginning of the activities here.
Okay, well, first of all, the activities from the crew wake-up on day of descent.
And that's about 4 days into the flight.
Right. Will be basically the same as Apollo 10 and 11. That is, we're doing it the same way. The difference are in 11 and 12, in that area, are fairly small. We're changing some things that we're doing, like the way we separate and the way we do some attitude control. The purpose of this is to try to minimize the changes in orbit. If you recall, on 11, we missed the landing site by some 3.5 miles. We're trying to take out all of the extra delta V that could be put into the orbit.
What will the differences be in separating, that is, separating the lunar module from the command module?
Well, the undocking will be different. We're going to do what we call a soft undocking. We'll just let the two vehicles move out to the end of the probe and drogue assembly and then release the capture latches. And in other words, we won't impart any delta V to the separation itself of the two vehicles. This, we are sure, will minimize, again, our dispersions in the landing point.
Once they have undocked, what happens then?
Well, from that point, shortly after undocking, the command module will make a small maneuver to separate from the limb. And they'll go behind the moon in preparation for the descent orbit insertion burn, which will start the limb down toward the lunar surface. Now, this will take him down to an altitude of some 50,000 feet. At that point, the main engine on the limb will be ignited and will go into the final descent phase itself, which lasts just a little over 11 minutes. Now, we're going to do one thing different on this flight. We have a capability, again, it's oriented towards the problem we had on 11 with the dispersions. Once we get into the main descent itself, if we have an error that we've been able to pick up because of our tracking from the manned spaceflight network, we will update to the LEM computer a correction to take out the error. For example, on Apollo 11, if we'd had the capability, we would have put in this 3.5 miles, and the computer would then steer it out and hopefully get us to the point landing that we're trying to achieve on Apollo 12. This is the basic change in terms of targeting. In terms of the rest of the descent, we're going to land a little bit sooner than Apollo 11 would have landed on the nominal. That is, we've changed some of the targets within the descent so that we get down a little faster. Here again, this is in an attempt to be able to reach a point landing so that hopefully the crew can then walk to the surveyor during EVA.
Well, for our listeners, is there any similarity in the landing to an aircraft landing as they in the final stages of descent? Doesn't the limb land more or less at an angle to the moon's surface?
I would think it's more similar to landing a helicopter. You're coming in very steep, by comparison to an aircraft landing. You're coming in at what we call a glide path angle of some 16 degrees. That doesn't sound like a big number, but if you imagined yourself having to do it, that's pretty steep, which I would think is more analogous to a helicopter landing.
William McCrory's conversation with Cliff Charlesworth, flight director for this lunar descent phase of Apollo 12. Now back to Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner for a late status report.
1 minute and 14 seconds now until the descent orbit maneuver. We're standing by for that. We won't hear it. We won't know anything about it. It's just we just thought we would give you an exact time reference when this maneuver is to take place. It's to be a short burn, 28.2 seconds, to slow the spacecraft some 72 feet per second. Oh, that's about 30 meters per second to be subtracted from the velocity, a retrograde maneuver, to cause the Lunar Module Intrepid to drop from its 110-kilometer height above the moon down to some 15 kilometers above the moon when it approaches the landing spot around within our view on the daylight side. 25 seconds until that burn is to be effected. And about 19 to 20 minutes now before we hear again from the command module and the lunar module, before they come into view and we get acquisition of signal. 10 seconds until that burn is scheduled. And now the thrusters should be thrusting just to slow Intrepid by about 30 meters per second, just a 28.2 second thrusting. And if everything works as this mission has performed so far, all the way from liftoff into orbit to this point, it'll go perfectly. Everything has been uncannily accurate up to this point. The thrusters should have completed their job, and the Lunar Module Intrepid should now be beginning its descent. Bill?
Well, thank you, Rhett Turner. I was going to ask Bill Land some other questions here. In the final phase of this landing mission, the pilot takes over manually, and he can control his vertical velocity by a certain amount of clicks. I think it's 3 feet per second or something like that, and can punch into a computer to compensate for great changes. Is that right?
Norm, he has the capability of flying in manually anytime he wants to. He can actually take control and abort the landing if he wants to. But under a normal landing situation at about 500 feet or at what we call low gate, he will observe where he's coming in, and he can see rocks at that close distance and see the small craters and check the area out and land in the precise spot, a clear area, the precise spot that he desires. That is, provided it isn't more than a couple of thousand feet away. And to do this, he has a stick that he can control the movement fore and aft and sideways to get himself in the position that he picks out. He also has the ability to reduce or increase the thrust as he needs to slow down or to speed up his descent.
Well, how is the landing point designator and the computer related in this very critical phase of landing?
Well, the computer has a preselected site that is put into the system, and it's compared with a position that the spacecraft is calculating as it descends. Now, that, as compared to the landing point designator, which is, I believe what you're thinking of, is the sighting out the window that the commander does to at various landmarks that are pre-selected. And by sighting out the window through some scribe marks on the glass, he can tell how the spacecraft is, how close it's coming to the selected landing site.
Well, Bill Land, at what we call low gate, at the 500-foot mark, or about 150 meters, isn't it possible for the spacecraft commander, Conrad, to go in almost entirely to the surface automatically? I don't like to use that term, but using the computer and not taking over manually, or must he take over manually?
There's nothing wrong with the term automatic, because that's exactly what's done up to mm-hmm. that point, and he can go in automatically. That's right. The computer can take him right down to the surface. However, it's the chances are that it would be off 1 or 2 feet per second, possibly, in landing, and he can do a better job of picking out the precise spot. Mm-hmm. The chances, I guess, would maybe be 50-50 that the computer would get him into a spot that would be most desirable. Well, I think the chances are much better when he does it himself.
Well, will he have visual sighting in those last few minutes of descent?
Yes, he'll be able to see the surface around him. He won't be able to see the surface under him, but the spacecraft is always moving forward until the very last moments of vertical descent. And while it's moving forward, he can see ahead and see where he's actually going. And that's when he uses this landing point designator, and that's when he makes his visual observations. Once he has selected the site he's going to, that is a precise location that he's going to, then he will find himself just prior to touchdown directly over that position. He'll no longer be able to see it. But that'll just be a matter of a few feet, and he'll be confident in where he's going at that time.
Well, this landing is comparable, I guess, to a glide path, a rather steep glide path of an aircraft of about, what is it, 14 or 15 degrees?
It's about 16 degrees at about the time he reaches the low gate. He has come down a glide path of about 16 degrees, and I think that... As Pete Conrad, I believe it was, mentioned, that it's more like a helicopter landing from that point on. It's a rather steep glide path coming all the way in, and then as he approaches the landing site, it's more and more vertical.
He can hover and move horizontally.
Yes, he can hover. He can hover just like a helicopter does, and in fact, he can lift off before he even touches down if he wants to do that.
Norm Guerin?
Is there a countdown procedure to appraise the lunar module pilot of the fuel he has remaining as he makes this descent?
He will be keeping track. Yes, he knows how many seconds of fuel he's got, and he will be counting down. The computer will be counting down. The ground will be counting down, and he really has three indications there that of the fuel remaining.
Well, John Hammersmith, in this flight of Apollo 12, in the descent, the final descent, don't we have one extra update on the computer that was not on the Apollo 11 flight plan?
Yes, Bill. I think Bill Land alluded to that some time ago when we were talking about the fact that the lunar module will be in sight of the Earth during its landing glide path, if you will. For a little bit longer than was the case on Apollo 11. And they will take advantage of this to update the computer, and then they will also be verbally talking Pete down and updating him as much as they can, giving him all the help they can from the ground.
And this should help greatly in this pinpoint landing that we're striving for on this flight, should it not?
Yes, this this pinpoint landing is actually being done based on an ideal situation, which is built into our guidance system at this point. That's the reason we're being so careful not to put in these little disturbances in the orbit that we heretofore have been so casual about, particularly when we were working in Earth orbit. Perhaps one day, and hopefully not too far off, we will have our guidance systems refined to the point where these little disturbances can be taken account of. Then a pinpoint landing will not be such a delicate matter because the instrumentation will be able to compensate all the way through.
John, just in case we have some people who are keeping score on us, we're attempting to demonstrate a point landing capability here, and John mentioned this before. I think it's worthwhile stressing that point, that it's really a demonstration, and even if we were to miss the target on this one, we could still demonstrate the capability depending upon the reason that we miss. So just when we land, if we aren't precisely on the spot that we had selected, it doesn't mean we have not demonstrated that capability. Now, the capability is not mandatory for this mission, whereas it will be mandatory for some of the future missions.
The reason for that is that the sites that are of greatest interest to the scientists are those which happen to be extremely rough. This is where you get your geological, your significant geological information, for instance, and get information about what underlies the lunar surface without having to do a great deal of digging. And of course, along with this rough terrain goes the necessity to be able to put yourself down exactly where you want to be, because if you're off a bit, you run the risk of running into some awfully rough terrain. We have had very at the beginning, we have picked sites that are very level. This is to make it easy for the for us to carry off a successful landing. We're now in process of refining that technique so that we can get to the sites that are of greater interest.
Well, Bill Land, I know that you are very interested in the pinpoint landing being a success. You are, of course, the mission engineer for Apollo 13. And possibly the reason for that is that the landing site, or at least the possible landing site for Apollo 13, is in a rough area, is it not? The Fra Mauro area of the moon? And you have to be pretty precise and landing at the correct point.
Being precise would certainly help us a great deal in that situation. We have to be precise for really two reasons. One is that there isn't much clear area to land in, and the other is that we want to be able to land at differing sun angles, sun elevation angles. That is to say that higher angles of sunlight, such that we don't have long shadows. Now, if we don't have long shadows, that means as we're gliding in on this low 16-degree glide path, it's more difficult to pick out the landmarks. Mm-hmm. If we do have a point landing capability, we're confident in where we're coming down, and the landmarks will be much easier to pick out. So for that reason, as well as the fact that we have such a small area to land in, we need this kind of a capability.
After they return from the surface, we'll be spending some time in lunar orbit taking some high-grade photographs of this site as well as a couple of others, so that we have an excellent idea of just exactly what the landmarks are.
We're about 6 minutes away now from acquisition of signal from the Yankee Clipper and later the Intrepid. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting worldwide with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That coverage continues following this brief summary of late world news.
Here's the latest news from the Voice of America. Apollo 12's command module, Yankee Clipper, and lunar lander Intrepid have separated and are flying in their own lunar orbits preparatory to man's second landing on the moon. The undocking and separation maneuvers were executed flawlessly. Viewers on Earth were able to watch on live television as the delicate separation took place. In less than an hour from now, Charles Conrad and Alan Bean in Intrepid will initiate their descent orbit burn to put their windmill-shaped craft into position for its powered descent and touchdown on the moon. Touchdown is scheduled for 6 hours 53 Greenwich Mean Time on the western edge of the moon's ocean of storms. Intrepid's landing will come almost 4 months to the day from the historic date of July 20th, when Apollo 11 astronauts Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin placed man's first footprints on the moon. The continuing story of Apollo 12 is being carried to the world live by the Voice of America. Italian workers began walking off their jobs early Wednesday in preparation for a 24-hour nationwide strike in protest against the government housing policy. An estimated 15 to 20 million workers are expected to take part in the walkout called by the nation's three major trade unions to back their demands for cheaper housing. Dispatches said all government offices will be closed Wednesday, with even the city policemen joining the strike. Most industry and business offices will also be closed, but some shops will be open part of the day. There will be no newspapers, no mail or telegraph service, and probably only limited telephone service. Only news bulletins will be issued on the radio, and television programming will be seriously affected, except for the live transmission of the Apollo 12 moonshot. Unions have called big rallies in most cities, and thousands of national police will stand by in case of violence. Visiting Japanese Prime Minister Eisaku Sato opens talks with President Nixon Wednesday, with the return of Okinawa to Japan expected to be a main topic. Mr. Sato spent Tuesday conferring privately in Washington with his aides in preparation for the talks. In Seoul, the South Korean Foreign Ministry expressed hope that the Okinawa issue would be handled in such a way as not to reduce the island's strategic value to area defense. Prime Minister Sato's departure for Washington provoked violent demonstrations by student radicals who oppose continued close security ties between Japan and the United States.